It takes more than great code to be a great software engineer. Welcome to Soft Skills Engineering. I am your host, Jameson Dance.
And I am your co-host, Dave Smith.
Ooh, you're the co-pilot and I'm the pilot. Is that what that means?
That's right. So you can say your plane sometimes and I'll take the yoke.
Yeah, that means you get to land it, right?
Crash landing.
You're doing a great job. I think we have a story from a listener about getting fired.
Yes, we do. An anonymous listener wrote in with a great story. You know, these stories all have a certain element of tragedy, but I still say they're great because I think they're good for everyone to hear.
It is kind of funny that we start out the pod. Maybe we should clarify if you're a first-time listener. We did an episode a while ago on getting fired and kind of how you deal with it. And we realized that I don't hear of getting fired very often. It's like a shameful thing that people seem like they want to hide. So part of that, one of the outcomes from that was we wanted to hear your stories and share them with people to kind of take away some of the stigma and show it happens to a lot of people. It's kind of a part of life, even if it is painful and you can recover from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the best part. And that's why we share.
Yep.
So here's the story. I'm going to skim some parts and read some parts verbatim. So this developer is from the Dominican Republic with 4 years of experience as a developer. And last year, a colleague of this developer's recommended him to work at a company in the United States. So he began working remotely doing web development for the company. It was awesome until a couple months in, the lead support engineer left the company and his boss asked him, I'm just going to start reading now. My boss asked me to move to the support team temporarily, right? Like famous last words, right? Since I'm proficient in English, most of the developers here come from countries and they have a very strong, or some from non-US countries and they have a very strong accent. I hated that job, but I did the best I could. I was behind my teammates in stats, like tickets resolved and stuff, and my boss asked me several times why I was behind. I told him several times that I wasn't fast enough to work with customers. I'm a software developer, and I've never worked directly with customers before, and this was my first remote job, and there's so many variables. And they never moved me back to my original team. So just to summarize, 2 months in, and this poor developer got moved off the development team and to temporarily cover a support position. So 2 months after that, he says, my boss got me fired, claiming they had financial problems and had to let me go. That shred me to pieces since I'm really conservative with jobs and I was doing my best to do a great job. Since I was a contractor, they only had to pay me the hours billed that month. That was almost 2 months ago and I only just started to get back on my feet. Thanks for reading so far. If it makes it to the podcast, I would love to be anonymous.
And that's from... Just kidding.
Yes. So the story here is a developer basically got pushed into a job that wasn't really trained for and then did poorly and then got fired. But it's like, oh, what a hard situation, you know?
Yeah, that's another one where I don't really know what they could have done differently. It just seems like external forces conspired against them.
Yeah, I think it's a good reminder for people because sometimes businesses have weird needs, right? Like it's like, oh, something crazy just happened and we need you to stop writing code and start doing this other thing for a while. But don't worry, it's only temporary. And I think if you're in that circumstance and you know that it's going to be something you really don't want to do, you need to be very clear with your management about what the track is to get back to what you do want to do.
Sure.
You know, and I don't know how to do that exactly, but other than like, making it very, very clear that you're willing to take a hit, but that you need a clear pathway back.
Just quit and get a different job.
The go-to.
Yep.
Quit before they fire you.
Well, thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah, thank you.
I will read the first question.
Okay.
It's very short. How can I gain a better understanding of the business side?
There is no business side. It's all code.
It's all code. It lives or dies based on tabs versus spaces.
That is the business. Oh, that's what they mean by the business side.
There was somebody did an analysis of some GitHub data and spaces won, I'm sorry to say. All you tab lovers. I guess by one, I mean are more common.
And by what margin? Was it like a presidential election win?
It depends on the language. C was pretty evenly split, but the rest were pretty heavily in favor of spaces. But I guess you could say like Walmart is more popular than like some fancy boutique store, but that doesn't make it better. And then you get all snooty about the superiority and the just unwashed masses use spaces, but the true sophisticated people use tabs.
Every boutique store I've been in uses tabs for sure.
It's so true.
So what the heck is the business side?
I assume that means like how your business makes money and how it exists.
Like all the other operations that aren't you sitting in your little cave writing code with Mountain Dew.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is a great question to ask. We've talked a little bit on the show before about how we both kind of had awakenings at some point where we realized, hey, without business people, I would not have a job.
Yeah.
And before that, we kind of had this idea that we did the real work and everything else was just nonsense.
The only reason they do business is because they can't write code.
Yeah. Yeah. They couldn't hack it in our world, which is so dumb. So the fact that this person is asking this question, I think, reflects some maturity and is cool.
So I have a little story I'll tell.
Please.
I had been in the engineering world for about 2 years, and I got a new job. And that company had a tradition of letting all the new people go to lunch with the CEO within a few weeks of their hire date. And it was really cool. So we went to lunch. I sat down with him. His name was Gary. He was an older gentleman approaching retirement, but he had been running this company for the last, I don't know, 20 years or so. And he told the coolest stories. Like I asked him, you know, what was it like in the early days? And he told me stories about how they had these shoestring budgets and they
Papa,
just like...
tell me of the old country, Papa.
And he talks about how they barely made payroll a bunch of times and he had to go without pay so they could pay their people. And I'm like, that is so cool. And it gave me a lot of empathy for what he had done to build this business, not really being an engineer himself, but building up the business so that engineers could have a great place to work and doing all this super hard stuff. And it was awesome. So I recommend that if people want to get in touch with how the business operates, go all the way to the top if you can. So go say hello to Bill Gates and go to lunch with him if you work at Microsoft. Who is it now? It's not Ballmer anymore. They have a new CEO.
Satal or something? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I've lost track. Anyway, go to lunch with that person and ask about the company. Ask about what they know. You could maybe, as an alternate, if it's a larger company, you could find the person who's been around the longest and just ask if they'd go to lunch with you and tell cool stories.
Satya Nadella. I know what he looks like. I couldn't remember his name.
Well, you'll get to know him better when you go to lunch with him.
Yeah, that'll help a lot. I think... this is kind of harping on the same point, but I would kill the myth of the pointy-haired boss. That idea that, again, the business people are some combination of incompetent and like scarily competent at ruining your life, which I don't know how those two things go together, but it starts with empathy and understanding that there's probably a reason they exist and they probably do something. The business isn't in the habit of just like paying people to waste time. So,
yeah,
you mentioned talking to the CEO of Microsoft and that brings up a good point, which is this is a lot easier to do at a smaller company. I feel like most of my understanding of business stuff has come from working at smaller startups where I know the CEO and it's like sit next to him or I can tap him on the shoulder or he's in the team or company meetings, he or she, so just being in a smaller startup, it has a lot of trade-offs, but one of the good things is you're a lot more exposed to that kind of thing just because there are fewer layers insulating you from that part of the business.
Yeah, and when the startup inevitably shuts down, you'll get very familiar with how the business
you'll
works.
You'll understand the
work.
Business side when you first hear, we missed payroll, and you'll be like, that's a thing that you can do? What? Yeah, I mean, especially if you're in a small company, it's so easy to just ask. Just ask, like, what does this thing mean? Or you can ask, what's our burn rate? Or I guess if you don't know what burn rate is, you don't know to ask that. But in my experience, people on the business side are so happy when engineers take an interest in it, partially because they have bad experiences in the past from being discounted or ignored. But also, I think engineers that care about the business are incredibly valuable, because it means that their work is more likely to affect the business side positively versus the ones that care purely about the technical things, where generally you need to kind of find a way to point them at something that happens to help the business so that they can get excited about that.
Totally. So true. Plus one.
Yeah, I mean, you can just ask about numbers. Ask, like, how much money did we make? And some people will tell you that and some will not. But that's a valid question to ask. Like, how much did we spend last month? How much cash do we have? Like, what are our investors? Who's on the board? I don't know. Just ask stuff.
Yeah. And I've got a few questions too. Maybe I'll throw out my list here.
Do it.
So you run into a business person, and after you recover from the shock, here's what I would ask. How did you get into the business? Or how did you go into business? Why did you join this company? Where does most of our revenue come from? What are our biggest expenses? How does the sales process work? And you will be amazed at how much depth there is when some of these questions get asked that these people have. It might just open a world you didn't even know existed.
What do you mean by
a new world?
Oh, yes. Dave, are you going to do our intro song next time? I would love to hear that. What do you mean by when you recover from the shock of running
into... Well, you know, because these two worlds aren't supposed to collide, right? It's like antimatter and matter, engineering and business.
I guess. I don't know. Open office plans mean everything collides all the time.
That's true. It's like a super collider.
Yeah. I hate open office plans.
Oh, we need to do an episode on seating.
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
It'll just be a 30-minute rant, but we should do it.
I've got some rants stored up. Yeah, so one other point I want to ask you about is the jargon. How do you... I mean, there's a lot of terms. There's a lot of things you hear that you want to understand, but there's a lot of unknowns as well. Mm-hmm. How do you break
through
that?
Yeah, here's what I do. This goes both ways, and I'm sure business people will hear a lot of engineering jargon and think it's nonsense, but they actually have a lot of jargon too. So I like to, whenever I hear a piece of jargon, I write it down. I usually don't stop the meeting or stop the conversation. I'll write it down unless I need to know, you know, right away, but I'll just make a note, and then over time I'll accumulate enough to where I feel like, okay, I need to go ask somebody this, and I'll actually go sit down with somebody and just say, hey, tell me what all these terms mean. Some terms that I learned when I came to my current job about 5 years ago were ARR, which I think is annual run rate or annualized run rate. TCV,
what?
Total Contract Value.
I thought that
was
annual recurring revenue.
Oh, yeah, that's right. MRR, I think, is monthly recurring revenue. See, clearly I don't do a very good job.
Tell me more about how you're an expert on this, Dave.
Look, the big secret is this is actually a comedy show.
It's like the Daily Show excuse, right? We are a comedy show about the news. Yeah. We're not a news show.
Right. And they say that, but they're totally a news show. Anyway, yeah. So TCV, total contract value, you know, just things like that. And most of them will end up being acronyms. And I'll usually hit Wikipedia to see if I can find them. And if not, then I'll go ask somebody. And sometimes they might be intimidated by you. But a lot of times if you just say, hey, I'm just curious and I want to know, that'll help give them context instead of being like, I'm going to take your job.
Yeah. Don't say, I'm going to write a program that does your job based on the information that you tell me. It's a bad way to learn. One other thing I thought of is knowing this stuff is a great way to move into something more entrepreneurial. A lot of it, if you're just really passionate about a product idea, you'll kind of be forced to learn in order to not die. But if you can go into it knowing more about the business side, it'll help you make better decisions and avoid a lot of mistakes too. I mean, people have figured out smart ways to do things. Just like there are best practices for code, there are probably best practices for all kinds of different business things. And if you can learn those ahead of time, it'll improve your chances of success, I believe.
Yeah. Jameson, have you ever been like on a sales call?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Can you tell us about your experience?
I've talked about it a little bit before, but it was fascinating. Before my interaction with customers was through product people. So someone had already done the hard work of looking at what we had, looking at what they wanted, coming up with some kind of diff, figuring out what's the important stuff out of the diff that they need. And then we start talking about features. But it was just coming very raw from the customers, and it was a little overwhelming. Like, you hear a lot about how horrible salespeople are because they promise features to try and close sales, and then that drives engineering, and it does suck. But it's so easy to do when there are humans on the phone that are excited and they ask, like, what about this thing? And there's just an instinct to say, like, yeah, we could do that. 2 weeks. How hard could it be? And then they're so happy with you and they promise to give you a ton of money. Or alternatively, you hear what they actually think of your product, not what the cheerleader that's trying to encourage your team says about your product. And that's very eye-opening as well, to hear issues where they get really hung up or where it doesn't quite fit their needs that you might not even have heard of. Some of that is kind of will come out in user testing if that's ever a thing you do as well. But definitely sales calls are a way to see the truth of what customers think.
Yeah, so true. And I went on a sales call once, and we had built this software product for interviewing engineers for hiring. And I thought that it had all the features you needed. And I'm like, we're good to go. Now I'm just going to get on the sales call, and I'll go with the salesperson, and I'll tell the prospect how it works. And they'll be like, awesome. But what actually happened was they described their hiring process and like the logistics of getting people in the door and like how they make decisions and stuff. And I was like, oh, there's so much more that we did not build for. And it was just like you said, Jameson, just super eye-opening. It was really cool.
Yeah, it's a journey of discovery. And I wish you luck on your journey. I think it'll make you grow as a human being. And I think people love it when you ask them stuff about themselves, right? They love people. Yeah. Everyone loves to talk about themselves. So it's really not that hard to say, like, what do you do? Oh, that must be so hard. And that's all you say. And then they just talk forever about their job.
Yep.
Cool. Anything else you want to say about this?
One last thing is that even after doing all these things and talking to people a lot, you'll be amazed at how little you actually know about the business. Like, it can be a very involved, complicated field of study. And, you know, just like business people, after talking to you for even a couple of hours, won't really have a clue about how to write code or build a software product, you too will also not have much of a clue about how to run a business, even after spending several hours with these people talking about this stuff. So keep that in mind and be humble about it, and, you know, recognize that there's a lot more to know than what you know.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's a balance between giving a unique perspective and assuming that everyone is a moron and clearly hasn't seen this obvious thing that, why don't you just do this? And it turns out there's usually a good answer why. But I don't know. Yeah. Have a small ego. Good life advice too.
All right. Question answered.
We did it. Do you want to read the next question, Dave?
Sure. This one is from a listener named John. It says, can I be a good development team manager if I'm not a developer? John goes on to say, I've led product teams for years, but not specific things like growth, mentoring, code reviews, etc. Would this just annoy the team if I was their manager?
I think there are two parts to this. One is technical leadership, and the other one is managing the team. And I think your team absolutely needs technical leadership. There should be someone who is experienced to do code reviews and to help with broad technical issues. And if you can't do that, that's fine, but someone needs to. And that can, we've talked about this before, but that can often be like a technical lead.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't necessarily have to be all wrapped up in the same person, I guess, as the team manager.
Okay, true.
I think what I'm saying is yes. And here's why. I think management is about empathy. And if you can understand developers and what motivates them and what they want and how they're feeling, then you can manage them. And if you are a developer, it's you kind of get that for free because you lived it.
Yeah, free empathy.
But you can
if there is such a thing as free empathy.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, assuming you care and you're good with people and that's a thing that's important to you. You get that, but you don't have to be a developer to get that.
So I don't have a lot of experience to draw on from this one because almost all of my managers have been former engineers. Both the good ones and the bad ones. So I know that as a former engineer, it certainly doesn't guarantee that you'll be a good manager. I mean, that's good evidence that as a non-engineer, that's not a guarantee that you'll be a bad manager either, right? Or is my logic all bad on that?
Nope. It's perfect.
Perfect logic.
You've proved it. You've solved the puzzle.
QED.
All right, I'm hanging up now. This is a broad question, and it's kind of putting you on the spot, but what would you say are the skills of a good manager?
I think a good manager can recognize and fix problems on a team that include interpersonal dynamics, organizational problems, process problems. They know when people are giving their best and when they aren't, and they know how to help them. They know how to organize people in such a way that they'll optimally work well. You know what I mean? Like most productive, happiest they can be. They know how to defend the team from things that would harm the team, like distractions or other things like that. They know what a bad culture looks like, and they know how to like find bad incentives and shut those down. And I think, you know, Jameson, as you know, you asked me to list these things, and I'm just kind of spewing what comes to my mind.
Oh yeah, this totally put you on the spot. But
as I'm
great.
Listing, yeah, fake it till you make it. But as I'm listing these things, I'm thinking, like, why do you have to be a developer to do any of that stuff?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I could see how being a developer would help with a couple of them. But I would say most developers don't know what makes them productive. So if you're not a developer, you're not that far behind on the productivity part. And process, I mean, being a developer just gives you the power to complain about process, but it doesn't magically make you know what a good one would look like. So
that's so true.
I think in thinking about this, I could see how being a developer, I play video games, right? I'm confessing to the world. I play some RPG games, and there's usually a part where you create a character and you assign some points and different strengths and weaknesses. And in my mind, a developer who turns into a manager has some more points allocated to the technical stuff. So they might be better at recognizing when you are approaching a technical problem in the wrong way.
Or, I'm like a level 7 code mage manager.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a night elf code mage.
Yeah, a night elf code mage. And so you have strong code powers, but there are a whole bunch of other aspects to it. And someone who is not technical will have weaker code mage powers, but maybe they're like a berserker or something, and they just get in and chop people in half. And so they do a real good job at management.
They chop through bad process.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe, I mean, if they come from being a product designer or something, they'll have a very different perspective and different strengths and weaknesses, but they can still do a great job.
I agree. So I think the real question of the day is, to what degree do you need to be technical in order to be an effective manager? Do you, for example, need to be able to review the code of the people who work for you?
Absolutely not. I don't think so. But you do need to be able to identify someone that you trust to do that.
What about speaking the lingo? Like, the team is having a debate about whether we should do multi-process or multi-threaded, you know, web transaction handling. And you know, they're looking to you for a tiebreaker. You know, what do you do?
I mean, that sounds more like a tech lead role.
Dude, you go multi-process, Jameson.
Oh, shoot. I knew this one. Dang it. Oh, man. How many more questions are there? Can I still get an A?
So I think you do. You need to know like where your limits are, and you need to know the lingo to a point. But gosh, it can be really irritating when a manager steps in and they're like, oh, well, you clearly have to go multi-process.
No, you know? I think that comes from a good relationship with the team. And if the team knows, like, you will help them estimate well and kind of like manage their process well, but they know that you don't know what sockets are or something, so you can't I don't know, you can't decide if they should use Node or Ruby or whatever. I don't think everyone expects that of a manager, as especially if you're clear about like, hey, this is the team's job. And
yeah, I agree. But I do think a manager needs to be able to identify when the team has adequately explored a question and be able to ask enough questions that the team can respond, or to be able to identify that the team has made a good decision. Like, for example, Node versus Ruby, right? Like, if you can't explain to your manager why one is better, then you probably haven't thought the problem all the way through. And a good manager will be able to recognize that, even though the manager may have no idea what Node or Ruby even are. Do you think that sounds like a reasonable statement?
I think it does. I think especially in that case where the manager comes from a non-technical background, they probably need to make sure they're not being the tiebreaker, but they're just helping the team come to a decision.
That sounds right to
me. But the larger point is you don't need the technical background, but you should try and pick up as much as you can, I think, over time. Especially around things like... Oh, go ahead.
Nope, just saying I agree, because I agree with everything you say.
Oh, say it
and
more.
Even though we already know that, I just have to say it out loud sometimes.
Yes.
It's for you.
Well, I'm just thinking about... I think it can help you... I mean, estimation is one area where more technical knowledge can be better, because if you're not very technical, it's easy to be really surprised by estimates, because you maybe look at things from a UI perspective and say like, oh, we just need to make that button flash purple 3 times when they click, but you don't have the knowledge of like, it's actually implemented with like a slideshow in the background or something, and the slideshow program was lost decades ago, and so you can't change it. So trying to get more technical knowledge can maybe help identify when estimates are totally out of whack, or can help you from saying like, now, like, how many minutes will this take, when it's something that will really take like days or weeks.
Yeah, exactly. I think
even then, again, like, engineers don't know how to estimate. they've just made a lot of bad technical estimates.
So a good manager needs to know what questions to ask, even when they're not in their area of expertise. So let me give you an example of a not good manager when I was a tester a long time ago. And the story goes something like this. I'm testing this program. We have nightly builds that come out. And, you know, the previous day, my testing yielded like 10 bugs. You know, so the developers go to work on those bugs and they get fixes in. And then the next day I come into work and I get the nightly build and I run my tests and I get my results. And my manager comes to me and says, how many bugs do we have today? And I said, I found one bug. And my manager's like, that's great news, you know, and didn't really ask any follow-up questions. And I was too young and stupid to really go any further with the manager. But the problem was that one bug was actually that the program wouldn't even start. And so... It was like, the manager didn't quite ask the right questions. Now, granted, I was kind of an idiot and I should have just said, inconclusive results, program won't start, we'll have to try again tomorrow with a new nightly build, right? But but I just said one bug and the manager was like, woohoo, 90% bug reduction.
Oh, man.
So don't be that manager. Like, even if you don't have technical skills, you've got to still be sharp and critical. Like, you have to be a critical thinker, even though you're in an area where there's jargon and stuff flying at you that you don't know, you know?
Yeah, I think maybe a way to summarize this is part of being a good manager is making the team feel like you have their back. And if you can say, like, I've been where you are, I was in the trenches, remember Visual Basic back in the day, oh, 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 like, kind of gets you an in, and it might get you a jump start, but it's not the only way to do it. And if you can show your team that you care about them and that you will act in their best interests, and you're capable of helping them, I think they'll trust you.
Yeah. I think you just said the key word, which is trust. You have to be able to build trust with them. And sometimes that might mean saying out loud things like, hey guys, I don't have a technical background, or I haven't been a developer, so help me with this. And just basically putting your ego aside instead of having it be the elephant in the room that no one can talk about, you know?
Oh, they can smell it. We can totally smell it when somebody is faking like, technical knowledge.
Smells like elephant in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. It becomes really obvious. That's not a game you can play, so don't even try to play that.
You remember the T-Rex scene in Jurassic Park? Mm-hmm, that's what it's totally. Like. Where they can see movement.
Oh.
That does not make any sense. Never mind.
So developers are T-Rexes, and if you make a sudden move, you'll get eaten.
Yeah. Be afraid. No, that's not what I mean.
Hold still.
It's more like...
Don't shake.
It's more like... Here's what it's like. You know how in all the sports movies, there's some point where the new coach comes in and they're all skeptical and everybody's crossing their arms, staring at them. And then the coach somehow wins them over. That's what you have to do. You have to be Denzel Washington in Remember the Titans. Just be the most charming human being that has ever lived and it'll be fine.
I agree. And then they'll start calling you coach.
Yep. Yeah. Just be Denzel.
It'll hey, coach, be, I need a code fine. Review here.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I find really difficult about leading teams of software developers, even as a technical person myself with plenty of years of experience under my belt, is that A, I don't have time to review everyone's code, first of all. And B, everything you do in software is indirect. And here's what I mean by this. As a developer, when you write code, you can't see the code running on the computer. All you can do is see the effect of the code having run on the computer. And as a manager, when you're looking at your team, you can't see how productive they're being. You can't, not directly. And you can't see how happy they are directly either. There's not like a bar above everyone's head, like a health bar that's like the happiness and productivity bar, right? And so you have to learn how to observe things indirectly. And that means trust, because a lot of times it'll be up to the developers to tell you when things are going badly. And if you don't have that trust relationship, then you know you might be missing out on a huge input into your own managerial information.
Yeah.
So you've got to be the coach. You've got to be trustworthy. And even if you're a developer, you still have to earn that.
Yep. They got to be able to knock on your door and say, coach, let's talk.
Let's talk, coach. You know, before we went into this answer, I was actually in the camp of you really have to be a former developer to be a good manager. But I think as we've talked through it, I've realized that all the things that make a good manager good are basically orthogonal to being a good software developer.
Yeah, right? It's you see that in the promotion cycle too, where someone who's an amazing software developer just becomes promoted to a manager and they just can't do it at all.
Yeah.
Because it's not the same. Some people work it out because they're just really smart and that's what makes them a good developer. And then they apply that smartness to being a manager. But some people just don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fine.
So in other words, this is a two-way street of dysfunction.
Yep.
You can't go either way. But you can. Like what I'm saying is I don't know what I'm saying. That
in
one really
conclusion,
fell apart.
What? No, I want to say two more things. One is that even though we have said you do not need to be technical, I would say the expectation in the industry and from most developers is you need to be technical. So
exactly. That is so true, I think.
You will probably encounter some people, we've kind of already said this, but you'll probably encounter some people you need to win over or convince that might be a little skeptical. Because this is just the way it works, that engineering managers come from engineering.
This really goes back to our last question too, right? It's like the business side.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you know, if you were really smart, you'd be an engineer. Why are you a manager?
Yeah.
It's a broken expectation, but it is out there.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know of people who have excellent organizational and people skills and are just really good at empathizing. And they have tried to move into management. Some have been engineers, but just haven't been engineers for air quotes long enough, right? The idea you have to kind of like pay your dues. And it just didn't work out because of that kind of built-in cultural expectation. So that's a thing you have to fight against, but I think you can do it. The last thing
you
I would
say.
Yeah, you can totally do it. Don't be scared of that T-Rex. It's fine. It's a friendly T-Rex once you get to know it. The last thing I would say is I'll point you towards a blog post by Rans. I think we talked about him last time. Just famous blogger. He blogs a lot about engineering management, actually. But he has one called Managing Nerds, which is it's kind of his worldview on how to understand developers. And I don't know that it applies to all developers, but it's definitely an interesting read to see, like, here's a model you can use to understand what motivates your team. If you don't know anything about engineers or how they work or what gets them excited, start here. I mean, talk to people after that, but it's an interesting read written to someone who is smart, but maybe not super technical in their background.
Yeah. Now, I get the impression that Rans himself may be a manager of engineers who has never been an engineer. Is that right?
I'm pretty sure he was an engineer. I think he...
Oh, okay.
I think I Googled him once.
Oh, okay. See, I've been reading Rans for about 10 years, and he's been a manager that whole time. So
yeah.
Whether he was an engineer in the past or not, he's not one now, really, like not day to day.
Yeah, that's another point that some people move into management after a few years in engineering, and like somehow that counts, but they've been managing for way longer than they ever wrote code.
Yeah, and you know how quickly skills go out of date in our industry.
Oh, yeah.
So what does that say? I mean, I think that's case in point that you can be a great manager without having up-to-date software skills.
My former boss wrote a Visual Basic 3 book or something like that, and that was his that was his like technical cred. So
that was Joel?
Yeah. We gave him... We had a good rapport about that.
Did you give him a hard time about it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we talked a lot about rewriting in VB3.
Using his book as a guide.
Yeah, just train up the team. You can teach
us
how to do it. Yeah, and then all our problems will be solved.
See, and then there's an example of someone who's been able to create a fantastic engineering culture, although his skills are pretty much outdated since Visual Basic 3.
He did write a single Slack bot. It was like three lines of CoffeeScript or something like that.
Dude, credit restored.
Yeah.
Reputation restored.
Yeah. Still got it. All right. Anything else you want to say about this question?
No, you can do it, John. Give it a shot, and we'd love to hear about your experience.
All right. I think that wraps up our episode for today. How can people hear more from us, Dave?
Go hit us up on our website, softskills.audio. You can play past episodes there, you can stream them, or you can also subscribe. And if you're interested in sponsoring our show, we would love to have your money. And you can call you can find out details about how to sponsor us so that we can take all your money.
I'm an engineer. Can I learn sales skills? That's going to be... In an alternate world, this will show up in someone's like sales Q&A podcast.
In an alternate world where engineers want to go into sales.
Do you have money? We will take it. It'll be great.
Oh. Anyway, if you want to get your name out there for literally ones of people who are listening to this podcast.
No, there are thousands. We can say thousands of people.
Oh, that makes me nervous.
Thousands of ones of people.
Suddenly I have stage fright. Thank you for joining us for yet another week of amazing intellectual conversation. And remember, don't be a T-Rex. We'll see you next time.
See you later.